This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today with Layla Mutin, because it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Your questions can be sent to us via radio program at AOL.com. That's the email destination for questions that we take up on a weekly basis during our Q&A with Layla podcast. So Layla, of course, as you know, registered dietitian, also with a master's degree in nutrition. We work together at our practice in Manhattan on a daily basis. And so, how are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Very well, thanks. So, before we get to questions, you know, one of the lurid headlines recently, I was a little disappointed with the press coverage on this, and I'd like to do a little deeper dive on the subject, is relationship between fat intake and prostate cancer. A new study is said to suggest that a high-fat diet promotes prostate cancer. And of course, this kind of goes right up against our current infatuation with the ketogenic diet. So a lot of men may be asking themselves, well, yeah, ketogenic diet for diabetes, it's going to lower my blood sugar, I'm going to lose weight like crazy, ketogenic diet for cancer. But then how come this study suggests that fat intake, which is actually the cornerstone of the ketogenic diet, promotes prostate cancer? What's up with that? And, you know, we've both been doing a little bit of damage control on that subject. What have you found?
Right. What I found is distinctions were not made. First of all, in the setting of carbohydrates, it's more problematic with any cancer because cancers still love sugar, including our own blood sugar. There is really no distinction about the fats. We know that we're getting too many pro-inflammatory omega-6 fats as opposed to omega-3. On a ketogenic diet, that ratio was much better. Typically in the standard American diet, or the SAD diet, which was probably the setting of the study in looking at what people were eating.
Yeah. So a high-fat diet in the context of a typical American diet is not a particularly good diet.
Exactly. It's very high in omega-6, too many grains, all of that. Where the ratio of 6 to 3 omega-3 fats is more like 20 to 1. In a ketogenic diet, it's closer to 4 to 1, 2 to 1, because the grains are gone, which is a heavy-duty source. And commercial meats as well. They are higher in omega-6 fats. We eat what the animal eats.
Right. And also, when you survey a population, and by the way, the study is a rodent study, right? It was a rat study.
That's right. We have to be very careful.
Rats don't eat a lot of fat. You know, I mean, they can, but they don't generally go for fat. They're on a grain diet. And so,
a grain diet and a garbage diet.
Basically, garbage, whatever they can find.
Exactly.
And, so it's not that easily extrapolatable, if that's a word, to the human situation.
Right.
Plus, here's another objection that I had when I first read this is, in humans, a high fat diet is often a marker for a poor, food selection, the exclusion of fruits and vegetables.
Yes.
And also not the greatest lifestyle altogether.
That's right. You know, high in trans fats.
Right.
Trans fatty acids, the man-made, you know, the margarine, the shortening, your snacks, your cakes, your Danish or donut in the morning, that's all full of trans fat. It's the wrong type of fat to have. So that type of high fat diet, again, the SAD diet, standard American diet, is indicative of that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there's something I think in the study, and I didn't delve into it, about how some switch got turned on where fat, you know, became a fuel for the cancer or something like that.
Yeah.
And so actually, this is an issue that you're going to take up in greater depth.
In greater depth on my podcast on Layla future... Weighs In. I'm going to weigh in on this. Yeah.
Okay. So for some, you know, depending on the timing of the release of this Q&A with Layla, that podcast will probably be available.
It'll be available a couple of days after this podcast.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Fine. Well, you know, the way this works is we may have a week delay. We may be a week ahead.
Okay.
Okay. So whatever.
Yeah.
So look for that podcast.
Yeah.
And for further explanation and, look, what we don't recommend a diet that is high in, American cheese, that
right.
is high in,
corn oil,
bologna,
exactly,
the poor quality fats that you find in fast food. I don't think you can indict the ketogenic diet based on this study.
Right.
And, so for example, I mean, I'm on a relatively high fat diet, but I also eat tons of fresh fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And, that I think mitigates the effects of high fat. And of course, Atkins was never against eating low glycemic index vegetables.
Not at all.
It's a little harder to find low glycemic index fruits.
Right.
But if you're not...
Berries are fine. Grapefruit, kiwi, plums, cantaloupe, green apple, to name a few.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. That would be plenty of fruit.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So.
Okay. Good. Okay. So I think another misleading headline, and it was reported widely, and I think it sows confusion among people who are trying to follow the diet controversy. So let's get to questions.
Yes. Actually, Dr. Hoppen, we've got a really nice email from somebody, Erin. Erin is a nurse practitioner in Maryland. She writes, and this is in response to a previous question we had of a caller with blepharitis. Erin writes, I've been a listener of your radio show and podcast regularly for the past year. I'm a nurse practitioner. I've been studying functional medicine. Fabulous. Erin, we need more like you. I appreciate all of your information. I've learned quite a bit listening to your show. And I was listening to the Q&A with Layla from January 3rd. A listener, Tony, had called about her blepharitis.
Had written
about her blepharitis. It made me think of a podcast I listened to recently in which that topic was discussed. It was by Dr. Travis Ziegler, who uses an integrative approach to eye disorders. He talked about blepharitis. He developed a soap with tea tree oil and certain other...
Tea tree oil, which has antiseptic properties.
Exactly. Yeah. And other hypochlorous acid spray used to reduce bacteria along the lashes. Anyway... She wanted to direct Tony to the website, I Love the Sun, I being E-Y-E,
okay.
lovethesun.com for more information, and hopefully Tony may find that helpful.
Yeah, we haven't heard of this doctor, but it sounds intriguing, and, we need more integrative oncologists.
Yeah.
Dr. Robert Abel has been doing this for decades and decades. He's getting a little bit possibly towards retirement age, although he's still pretty prolific. And we need more and more integrative optometrists and ophthalmologists to step up with solutions for people with eye problems.
Absolutely. Erin, we thank you for this information, and thank you for listening to Intelligent Medicine.
Yeah, iAdvisory.com, by the way, is the website of Dr. Robert Abel. And we can...
iAdvisory.com, E-Y-E.
E-Y-E.
Yeah.
EYEiAdvisory.com.
Okay.
And he's been a frequent guest on Intelligent Medicine. Maybe we'll have him back on, and if I can remember, I will ask him about blepharitis.
There you go.
Okay.
Great. Okay. We have an email from Larry. One day recently, after running up some subway steps, I noticed my heart was racing, which was unusual. But that day, I just started taking a supplement that had ashwagandha, ginseng, astragalus, dong quai, wolfberry root, all of these things, crane, ginseng. And when I got home, I read the back of the label that said, don't take this if you have high blood pressure. I appreciate your recent article on supplements for high blood pressure, but can you please speak about supplements or herbs that should be avoided by people with high blood pressure?
Okay, well, absolutely. You know, it looks like he took a sort of a super energy formula.
Yeah.
That has a lot of adaptogens.
Right.
But also potentially stimulating herbs in it, mm-hmm. which, you know, he didn't say his blood pressure was raised. He just said his heart was pounding.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, he was just self-conscious about that after climbing stairs, you know, and you know.
Or maybe he thought he could bound up those subway steps after because he started taking right, the supplement
right, right.
today.
And hey, guess what? You know, there's this, this is typical for New York, uh-huh. is that I avoid the subways whenever I can, but sometimes I have to take the subways.
Sure.
And my stop mm-hmm. has two sets of very steep escalators.
Mm-hmm.
And there are three. There's one going up, one going down, and then there's one going up at the next level, but you have to walk down.
Uh-huh.
And invariably, one of those is on the fritz.
Yes.
It is perpetual that yeah. one is on the fritz. So sometimes, you know, I have to walk up and I go, okay, you know, no big deal. It's a good workout, you know, because
right.
actually I pay to go to the gym to get on the Stairmaster and, you know, climb stairs. You know,
now you can just pay your MTA fare. And
yeah,
walk
exactly.
Up the-
yeah, right. So, but I got to say that when I get to the top, even though I'm well conditioned and uh-huh. I just did a triathlon, and hey, my heart's pounding. You know, so yeah, uh-huh. it's a normal adaptation exercise.
Uh-huh. How did that triathlon go?
Well, it was a very interesting little
yeah.
aside is that, you know, first of all, it was an indoor triathlon because mm-hmm. you don't particularly want to do a triathlon that's an outdoor triathlon outdoors in New York in January,
yeah.
especially with the weather we've been having. So
yeah.
imagine a plunge in the Hudson River, you know, for the 0.9-mile swim. I don't think that would go very well. I don't think there's a wetsuit in the world that is capable of offsetting the, you know, there's literally
the hypothermia
ice.
That there's, would happen.
There are ice breakers in the Hudson, you know. So anyway, so it was done inside, and it was sort of a mini version of a triathlon. It's you swam for 10 minutes, and they recorded how far you could go. And I was happy to see I was able to do 21 laps of the pool. And then you did continuous cycling for 30 minutes. I logged 14 miles in 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ran for 20 minutes continuously. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it was basically a triathlon, you know, those three components, swim, bike, run, like in a normal triathlon, but inside on machines and an indoor pool. And I was happy, you know, I completed it, I felt good.
Great.
I was out of...
How novel, though, to be able to do something like that indoors, that they were able to arrange.
I was the number seven male, and all but two of the contestants were younger than me.
Bravo.
So I feel good about it. I mean, look, I'm not like speed demon, I never was, mm-hmm. but I got her done. And I, you know, said it was a good morning workout. It was an excuse to have a more structured exercise experience and an incentive to go a little harder than I normally might.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was this weekend and, some of the people were obviously real, accomplished triathletes
mm-hmm.
and they did it as kind of a winter tune-up.
Mm-hmm.
Others were, you know, sort of duffers who were trying to get in the game because it wasn't that demanding, and kudos to them for trying it out. Maybe that'll mm-hmm. inspire them to do a real outdoor triathlon come summer.
Right. Wonderful. Coming back to Larry, another thing that occurs to me about high blood pressure is you want to avoid licorice.
Right. Let's answer his questions because he does say, you know, what can raise blood pressure? Now, can Korean ginseng raise blood pressure, do you think?
It could. I think any very energizing supplement could have mm-hmm. the capacity to adversely impact somebody with already high blood pressure
mm-hmm.
that way. Somebody who's normotensive, I wouldn't think so.
I wouldn't think so, yeah.
I wouldn't think so.
None of those things really, I don't think it's going to make your heart race or make your blood mm-hmm. pressure rise. I guess it's possible, but licorice in particular will raise blood pressure.
Yeah.
Any of the stimulant herbs like ephedra, which has now been outlawed, will do it.
Yes.
There's something called citrus aurantium, which has, it was designed as sort of a workaround for mm-hmm. the, for ephedra being taken off the market, and it is a little bit of a stimulant. So it's a weight loss agent,
mm-hmm.
and it's a bit of a stimulant.
Yeah.
So anything that has caffeine or guarana.
Yeah, guarana, exactly. The other thing that...
Apropos of that, you know, is that some people take a caffeine before an athletic event.
Yes.
And what has been shown is that it works, but only if you don't normally take caffeine.
Ah. So give you a little more oomph.
It gives you more, but if you're used to caffeine, it doesn't help very much.
It doesn't do that.
So if you're like a 3-cup coffee per day person, taking a shot of caffeine before a race isn't going to do much for you.
Right.
Except prevent you from going through caffeine withdrawal, which could make you slow down. But if you, like me, I take decaf, and so I'm getting minimal amounts of caffeine. And so before a big race, not this race that I did this weekend, it didn't really require anything special. But for something big.
Oh, it was just a triathlon.
No, but it was a little one.
It was a little. Okay,
It wasn't like a Olympic distance or a half Ironman or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, for something like that, I mean, I got to say, when I did the marathon, I remember years back, they had a stand where you had a choice of Gatorade or Coke.
Ugh.
And I took Coke because I wanted sugar and I wanted caffeine.
Yeah. To get you through.
And that just, because you just feel like, ugh, there's another, 8 miles to go. And it's like, come on.
Yeah.
So you need something.
Right. Oh, my gosh. So, Larry, those would be actually it. I can't think of anything else. Any other herbs or supplements that people should avoid with maybe if you are not taking vitamin E, this reminds me back in the day, don't start with, say, a 1,200 milligram dose of vitamin E.
Some people report that,
that it can raise blood pressure temporarily.
Or make heart rate rise.
Or something.
DHEA in some people, that's it's the hormone that's available over the counter. DHEA may cause a racing pulse for some people, but it's unusual, but it can happen.
Yeah. Okay. Larry, thank you for your question. All right. We have a question here. Let's see. I don't have a name. I've been listening to your podcast on the microbiome and have a question with regards to colonoscopy. I'm a 54-year-old man who's symptom-free, but my doctor is after me to get this screening. From what I understand, the prep for this procedure involves a massive disruption to the microbial population. It could conceivably alter the microbiome permanently. In older individuals, does the microbiome ever come back to normal or to pre-procedure levels? Are there alternative tests that can be done? I've read that stool samples can be tested for certain DNA that's indicative of colon cancer. Thank you for your insight.
Okay, so here's the deal. There is some new concern. It's been raised recently that, when you do a prep, you're washing out all your colonic bacteria, you're cleaning yourself out, and then some people have irritable bowel after a colonoscopy. It's caused by an imbalance in the microbiome, which gets altered by the clean out.
Yes. Go lightly or Miralax lately.
I would say that's theoretically a risk, but it's probably not that common that it occurs. A bout of diarrhea will do the same thing. Like a gastroenteritis or food poisoning will do the same thing. And sometimes that results in a post-infectious IBS or, it changes your microbiome or creates inflammation. I would say that that's not a big deal. But for those who don't have particularly high risk of colon cancer, who not had previous polyps or have not had...
inflammatory bowel disease.
Yeah. So these are people who are candidates for something called Cologuard. And Cologuard is not, the old tests were, they would look for blood. Well, that wasn't very accurate because, you could have a little tear in your rectum from a hemorrhoid and there's some blood.
Right.
Or, it could be interfered with by taking vitamin C that would mask the blood. Or if you ate any meat, it would show up blood. It was not a very
red
good
peppers,
test.
Red peppers, tomatoes, anything red.
I'm not even sure.
They tell you not to eat.
It was more about heme.
Ah,
the presence
heme.
Of it,
okay.
It picked up heme, which is, if you eat like a hamburger, you're going to get some heme in your stool.
Okay.
But so the new test is based on the DNA that's associated with colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It's very accurate. It's an alternative to a screening colonoscopy for someone who's low risk.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now covered, and you can get it from your doctor. And it's a take-home test, and basically you take a tiny swab of from the toilet paper and put it on the thing, and you send it in. It's a mailer. And you get an answer. And then you may still need a colonoscopy. Sure. Because if it comes up something, they're going to still need to look.
Exactly, exactly, yeah. So your microbiome can come back. It's a matter of repopulating, re-inoculating
right.
the gut, start taking probiotics and prebiotics, eat some fermented food, lactic acid bacteria fermented food.
Yeah, and for those undergoing a colonoscopy, I would strongly recommend taking some more probiotics and maybe some kimchi or maybe some yogurt, you know, if you tolerate dairy.
Yeah, or coconut milk yogurt or coconut kefir.
Yep,
something
as a way
like
of repopulating your intestinal tract.
As well. Okay. Thank you for your question. All right. Let's see here. We have an email from Rachel. Oh, hi, Dr. Hoffman. I've been feeling very stressed in the last few years. Someone or a group of individuals have hacked into my computer system and my phone, and they're pretending to be me using my info.
Well, all right. Just
we can't help you.
It's
we're not life.
Welcome
life.
To the modern era.
Yeah. So, I went to my internist after feeling breathlessness and chest pains. I was diagnosed with borderline low red blood cells and borderline low iron.
Well, hang tight, because even just the low blood cells and the low iron can make you feel breathless.
Yes, absolutely.
Right there. That's because you're not getting adequate oxygen delivery.
Right.
So, you know, regardless of the stress in your life, which can certainly cause you to feel chest pressure, right? That's really common in stress-related ailments. But getting some more iron, and building up your blood count can make a difference. Now, of course, when you have a low blood count, low iron, sometimes you need a GI workup just to make sure there's no GI blood loss, especially if you're postmenopausal female. I don't know if this is a young woman who has normal menstruation and losing blood that way.
Right. Okay. Right. We don't know. Rachel is inquiring. She said, after reading about, you know, I was taking a B-complex liquid several months ago, and it helped me immensely with energy.
Okay.
But then after reading about the methylated versions of vitamins, I switched to like a methylcobalamin, but I found it didn't give me the energy that this B-complex formula
You know, we're talking about apples and oranges because on the one hand, it's just the B12 methylcobalamin, which is very good for energy, but actually maybe what she needs is the full B complex.
Exactly. Not just the methylcobalamin. She's also tried it with the methylfolate, like in Jigsaw.
Yeah.
So she didn't get the complex of B vitamins, which she found. You know, another thing, when you take only one of the B vitamins as opposed to the whole complex, it may deplete certain other of the B vitamins. And maybe Rachel was lacking in some B6, which she was getting in the B complex, but not in the other formulations. But, you know, that's absolutely what could have happened. But the first thing first, a reason for fatigue is the anemia.
Yeah, and it needs to be corrected to see if that will address the breathlessness. Of course, you know, some stress reduction, cognitive behavioral therapy for stress, that wouldn't hurt. Magnesium also sometimes, magnesium deficiency can actually cause people to experience breathlessness.
Yes.
So taking magnesium, which is good for stress, actually helps alleviate breathlessness in some people.
Yeah. I would add to that a fish oil.
Yep.
For the stress as well.
Sure. All right. And, you know, theanine and any number of things, vitamin B6, P5P, those are good for stress as well.
Rachel was actually asking, is it possible that I'm just lacking intrinsic factor? That I'm not getting.
Well, you know, that's easily ascertainable because you can do tests, antiparietal cell antibodies to see if there's a true pernicious anemia. Nowhere is she talking about levels of B12, which should be checked.
Exactly.
And, you know,
that's a good idea.
You can't have a normal B12 and have an absence of intrinsic factor. And it sounds like this person's overthinking it.
Yeah, okay.
A little bit. And which is sometimes a concomitant of anxiety.
Sure.
Yeah.
Especially after being hacked.
Right.
Woo! Keep yourself safe, Rachel.
Indeed.
This is the world we live in.
Okay, so we need to pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts. So what can we look forward to in part two, Layla?
What is the deal with structured water?
Okay, well, we're going to have a little review of the claims for structured water in part two. When we return, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.